Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
All right, guys, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter, and today we're going to be talking about the SmackDown that aired on November 13th, 2020, a Friday the 13th episode of SmackDown. But anyways, before we get started here, we actually have some breaking news that happened late Friday, or I guess before SmackDown started, but Friday evening sometime. Zelina Vega, as I'm sure by the time you hear this, you all know, she was released from the WWE. The release came about 10 minutes after she tweeted, "I support unionization." And if you're not aware or familiar with that whole situation, this basically stems from WWE's decision to prohibit its talent from using third-party businesses, such as Cameo or Twitch, just basically anything that they were having a second source of income from, using the WWE characters or the names of which they were advertising themselves as, like Big E, for instance, on Cameo. He was calling himself Big E. And I'm sure that a lot of people wanted to get their, you know, birthday shout outs or whatever it is that you're going for on Cameo. I'm sure Big E, you know, was getting a lot of attention there. So losing that probably isn't necessarily something that they're going to be happy about. And that's just an example, obviously. Zelina Vega showed her frustration by tweeting that, and it ultimately costed her her job, which is very unfortunate. I know that a lot of people here on the WWE Podcast are fans of Zelina Vega. We feel like that she's excellent on the mic. She was just getting started as far as her singles in-ring career goes, and it is unfortunate that we are not going to see that happen in WWE, but I do wish Zelina all the best. I know she's not going to have any trouble finding work. She, like I said, she's very talented on the mic. Who knows what she can do in the ring? I feel like she was just getting started there. But this is just what happens with WWE. I mean, they really don't play around when it comes to that type of stuff, I guess. Like I said, they acted very swiftly on this, very quickly too. And I know it caught me off guard. But those are the things that you can't control. And like I said, we wish Zelina Vega all the best going forward. But like I said, this SmackDown aired on November 13th, 2020, which November 13th, if you're aware, and I'm sure you are, from maybe seeing it on social media from various wrestlers posting tributes or just shout-outs, and even throughout the night on SmackDown, there were some wrestlers basically paying tribute as well as the announcers referencing it, but basically, November 13th was the 15-year anniversary of Eddie Guerrero's passing. And that is just one of those things that if you were a fan of wrestling during that time, you definitely remember this. You remember where you were whenever you found out. It was just crushing. He was one of the most beloved wrestlers of all time. He still is. And basically, this was just a pretty monumental time. You saw a lot of raw emotion from wrestlers as they talked about it that night on Raw. I remember that very vividly. And his family, as in Vicky Guerrero, I'm pretty sure his daughter is actually married to Aiden English in real life. So they are still very much involved in the wrestling business. I know that here in Texas, which is where Eddie Guerrero is from, I mean, all the wrestlers here in the independent scene, they obviously all have a very high respect for Eddie Guerrero, as well as everybody across the nation, or probably across the world. If you're a wrestling fan, you're familiar with him. So I just wanted to give a quick shout out there. RIP to Eddie Guerrero. You are still missed by, I'm sure, everybody listening to this podcast. But like I said, we're here for the SmackDown review. And of course, like usual, after the SmackDown review, I'm going to give you a top five. This one's going to be a little bit different. Probably won't be quite as long. I'm not going to pull up an article or read quotes or nothing like that. This is actually going to be my top five finishing moves. And you can say finishing kind of lightly. I mean, maybe there's one or two on there that aren't necessarily finishing moves to the fullest. Sometimes they might be used as transition moves, whatever you want to call it. But like I said, this is my top five. So if you don't agree, feel free to message me your top five on Twitter. But having said that, we now turn our attention to what you guys are here for, and that is Friday Night SmackDown. And SmackDown continues the trends that they've been setting the past few weeks, and that is opening up the show with Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. This one, however, they come to the ring, and Roman references the quote-unquote Island of Relevancy, and he uses Jey Uso's recent success as an example. He then goes on to say that he is going to establish his dominance at Survivor Series by beating quote-unquote WWE's secondary champion. As soon as he's, you know, finishes saying that or addressing Randy Orton a little bit, he's interrupted by Drew McIntyre, and I was not a fan of Drew coming. I mean, I love Drew McIntyre. He is one of my favorite wrestlers that's on the roster right now. So it was pretty disappointing for me to actually not be happy to see him come out. But I let it play out. And despite the cross-branded nonsense, I actually really enjoyed this segment for what it's worth. So Drew comes out and he cuts a pretty good promo where he mentions the last time he and Paul Heyman's paths crossed, referring to him beating Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. And he says that Roman Reigns wouldn't know anything about what happened post-WrestleMania because he left the fans high and dry for months, talking about the coronavirus, how Roman was gone, obviously came back super cut, new teeth, just this new version of Roman. But Roman actually answers by surprisingly kind of agreeing with him. He tells Drew that he was right about everything, and he just simply says, "But I'm back now." And then after this, he kind of proceeds to just bury Monday Night Raw, saying that he doesn't watch Monday Night Raw. Nobody else does either. You kind of hear Paul Heyman in the background say, "You're not missing much," which I thought was kind of funny. But he basically, because he says that nobody watches Raw, he kind of just tells Drew to reintroduce himself, you know, kind of like a, you know, little small insult, read between the lines type of thing. He just says, "Tell the crowd, who is Drew McIntyre?" And Drew responds by saying that Drew McIntyre is the guy that's going to beat Randy Orton on Monday night, go into Survivor Series as a WWE champion, and show Roman Reigns who the real secondary champion is. And as things were kind of starting to heat up there, Jey Uso comes running out to the ring, uninvited apparently, and he kind of stands between Drew and Roman. He asks Drew what he's doing there and says that him and Roman run things around here, and that he knows that Drew wasn't invited. And in reference to Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens, Jey says that he took care of the last people who were disrespectful to Roman, and it looks like he's going to have to take care of Drew tonight, and then challenges him to a one-on-one match later. After this, Drew kind of shoves Jey to the ground pretty easily. I mean, he pushes him down like he's a little kid, and Roman kind of gets in between them, stops anything else from happening, and they kind of exit the ring. I mean, I would have liked for it to end after this. I mean, I really don't understand. First of all, I don't understand why Drew came. He's not the champion. He has no business on SmackDown. I mean, if he was the WWE champion right now, and him and Roman's match at Survivor Series was already set in stone and it was going to happen, then yeah, I mean, I understand it. But that's not the case. So I really didn't understand why he was even there. But I let it play out a little bit, and like I said, I wish it would have ended here and Drew not had a match. Like, it would have been better if he would have just left SmackDown after calling out Roman Reigns, saying what he had to say. But obviously, he gets challenged to a match later on that night. And there's a little bit more on that, and it gets a little bit more explained. But after they come back for commercial break, we see Roman Reigns backstage just completely ripping Jey Uso a new one. I mean, he's screaming at him. And he's doing that for what Jey just did in the previous segment. He says that he and only he runs the show around here, and he didn't ask him to go out there and handle his business or make a match for himself. And Jay kind of, you know, walks away, but between getting shoved down and just getting absolutely screamed at by Roman Reigns right in his face, I mean, Jey Uso is definitely taking a backseat here. And I don't mean that as far as he's not getting attention or he's getting shoved under the rug. He's very involved in this storyline. It's just he's kind of the butt of everything. And I know that's probably what they're going for here. It's just got to suck from a personal perspective from Jey Uso to know that every week you're basically going to go out there and be made a fool of. So that's just something I was paying a little bit of attention to. And it's something that I've noticed they're doing a lot. And like I said, I know they're doing it intentionally. They're trying to make Roman look like this, you know, jerk of a heel boss or faction leader, whatever. I just know that once there is a few more people in this quote-unquote faction, which I'm calling it a faction. I know it's not one yet, but I think we all know that's the direction they're heading. I think that Roman Reigns is going to even become more of this a-hole, and I am actually a pretty big fan of this version of Roman Reigns, so I'm all here for that. But after this, we actually get a Intercontinental Championship match on SmackDown between Sami Zayn and Apollo Crews. And before the match actually begins, you see Sami Zayn in the ring with the mic, and he is complaining about being told less than an hour before the show began that he was going to have to defend his Intercontinental Championship against Apollo Crews. And if I'm not mistaken, this is actually Apollo Crews' first match on SmackDown since being drafted. But he was looking good early, Apollo Crews, that is, in this match. He was basically doing whatever he wanted, and he had Sami exactly where he wanted. But he was eventually outsmarted by the champion because Sami Zayn gets thrown outside of the ring, basically right in front of the announce table, and he starts to take the apron off the ring. And he didn't, like, sometimes you can kind of see Nikki Cross, she'll kind of put her opponent behind the apron and do a bunch of weird stuff. But Sami Zayn actually just completely ripped it off and completely exposed underneath the ring. And Apollo, you know, goes to the outside and kind of tries to make a move towards Sami, but that's immediately countered, and he kind of trips and makes Apollo hit his head on the ring, eventually kind of puts his leg inside the structure that's normally covered up by the apron, and he kind of ties him up, and the referee's doing the 10 count the whole time this is going on. And Sami sneaks back into the ring at the very last second and wins this match via count out. I mean, this was kind of just a quick match to kind of feature Sami. He wasn't on SmackDown last week, so they're kind of trying to keep him involved, keep the match between him and Bobby Lashley a little bit relevant, so it's not just kind of one-sided where the Her Business is talking about Sami on Raw, and Sami isn't even getting airtime on SmackDown. So they had to bring him back at least for this week and give him a match. I definitely didn't think there was any way that Apollo was going to win, so no surprise there. But it was good to see Apollo in the ring. I hope that there are big things in store for him, because there's definitely room on SmackDown for some more baby faces. So I'm looking forward to seeing which one of those baby faces actually make that jump. But moving on here, after this, we get a little backstage segment with Adam Pearce and Drew McIntyre. And I'm glad that they had this, because I was actually kind of confused a little bit whenever he got challenged to the match by Jey Uso, because basically I remember on Raw, and correct me if I'm wrong, of course, but during that whole Raw Underground stuff, when that was going on, there was a night where Raw Underground wasn't a thing, it just wasn't happening for whatever reason, but Braun Strowman was still on Raw, and Adam Pearce stressed that, hey, you're not on the main roster, or you're not on the Raw roster, sorry, so I can't give you a match, but I can give you an unsanctioned match. And I wasn't sure if they were going to, you know, pull back from that, or if they were just going to give Drew McIntyre a match and just not even say a word about it. But they did actually say, Adam Pearce said that he cannot give him a sanctioned match because he's not a member of the SmackDown roster, but if he wants a fight, then he can make it happen. Drew obviously agrees to that, So we do get that match, but there's a little bit more when that comes, obviously. But the whole unsanctioned thing really just doesn't really make sense to me, especially this one in particular. But like I said, that match is the main event, so we will get to that whenever we get there. After this, we get another backstage segment. This one is Caleb Braxton and the Mysterios. And this might have been one of the best parts of the night, strictly because we find out that it is, in fact, the final chapter. And now, I'm not going to just put all my eggs in that basket and just assume that this is, in fact, the last that we're going to see Seth and the Mysterios together. But they alluded to it several times. The announcers said it. Ray said it. Seth said it. Kayla said it. I mean, everybody is saying that this is the last chapter. So I'm hoping that that is exactly what this is. But in the interview, Ray says that Seth has devoted all of his time to try and use text messages, paternity tests, or any other tactic to try to tear apart their family. But he says that everything he has done is going to culminate in one final match. So that is exactly what we get. But before we get that, Sasha Banks has a promo segment in the middle of the ring. And she basically comes out and puts the entire SmackDown women's locker room on notice after successfully retaining her championship for the first time last week. And for some reason, I have no idea why, but Bayley's music hits. And obviously, Sasha just gets distracted, and it's just the perfect setup for Carmella to sneak up behind her. She hits her with a super kick, and her finishing move, and I'm not really sure what that is. I mean, that might be completely on me. I probably should have looked it up, but that move that I've seen Lana do it, I'm pretty sure I've seen Brie Bella do it, but it's just that move where she just lands on her butt and kind of pulls her head down and slams it on the ground. I don't know if that's always been her move, but I'm not sure what that is called, but that's what she's been doing as her finisher the last couple weeks. So, but just as far as this segment goes, I mean, it wasn't long at all. It was pretty quick. Sasha didn't really get to say a whole lot on the mic before she was interrupted, but I just don't really understand what the point was in Bayley coming out. I thought that last week it was a pretty smooth transition into a program with Carmella, and obviously they're still going with that, but I just don't understand why Bayley, that is, would work with Carmella, or if that was even a thing, if Bayley is just kind of doing the Drew thing, just hanging on, tagging along a little bit in the Randy Orton and The Fiend thing. Bayley might be doing kind of the same thing here, where Sasha is trying to move on to Carmella and Bayley just won't let her, and it might eventually turn into a triple threat. I mean, we know that they love the triple threat matches, so who knows what is going to happen there. But as far as the Sasha and Carmella program goes, that is something that, I mean, I am pretty excited about. I do want to see how Carmella is from her time back. She obviously has a new look, so I'm not sure exactly how long she was gone, but she definitely was off the screen for a few months. So I do want to see if she's improved in the ring at all. I'm sure she's been training. I mean, I imagine that, I mean, she's dating Corey Graves, who's a former wrestler, so I'm sure that he's probably teaching her a little bit of tricks himself, but that is something that hopefully we get going forward. And if Bayley does just so happen to stick around, I mean, I guess I won't be too opposed to it. She's a great wrestler, but as far as storyline goes, I really want to see what they do with Carmella here. And after the women's segment, we get another backstage segment with Otis. And I mean, this is just, I don't even know where to start here, but I mean, Otis, he's backstage, he's kind of stuffing his face, he has three plates of food in front of him, and he's eating by himself. Dolphin, Robert Roode kind of walk up, and they're just talking about him as if he isn't there. They're making fun of how much he's eating, how his only friend turned his back on him, causing him to lose his Money in the Bank briefcase, and he eventually hears enough, kind of flips the table over, scares Dolphin Roode off, and they just run away. See, I take notes as I'm watching SmackDown, and sometimes things happen later in the episode that just completely contradict my notes and make it basically, like, I mean, sometimes it answers questions that I have or makes what I wrote earlier in the notes just completely irrelevant. And this is kind of what happened here, because I was kind of confused about what they were doing with Otis. It seemed like this was an angle to try to build some sympathy for him, and it also seemed like it had the makings of them showing us steps leading up to Otis reaching a boiling point and possibly turning heel sooner rather than later. But I'm not sure if that's going to happen given what happens here in a little bit. But just as far as Otis' character goes before all this stuff happened a little bit later, I mean, I feel like he's never really been more lost, in my opinion, as far as from a character standpoint. It was really hard for me to picture a direction or even fantasy book him into something that makes sense or that can get his feet moving. But I also wrote here that WWE should not have broken up Otis and Tucker yet. And unfortunately, I think that both wrestlers are going to pay for it by their careers just basically falling to just, I don't even know, just completely irrelevant. But I hope not. We get a little bit more of Otis here after his match with Dolph. That is a pretty quick match. Obviously, Otis is pretty pissed off from what just happened backstage, and it doesn't help that Dolph slaps him in the face immediately after the bell rings, but that was pretty much the only offense that Dolph got during this match. Otis pretty much dominates and squashes Dolph in less than 5 minutes, despite some small interference attempts by Robert Roode, but Otis has no problem putting Dolph to the side, and then you see him, Otis that is, go backstage, and he's approached by Chad Gable. And Gable comes up and tells Otis that this is what he wants to see from him all the time, and that he needs a mentor to help him unleash his quote-unquote inner alpha. And he hands him a pamphlet that says the Alpha Academy on it, and Otis seemingly agrees to it, that he's going to join him or whatever. I mean, he's kind of gibberish whenever he's talking about lifting weights or whatever. I mean, I really didn't understand what he said, but it seemed like he agreed, so... this could be an intriguing pairing, these two, but you have to wonder if you watch this segment if Gable is up to something. He kind of had that I have something up my sleeve look on his face as Otis walked away. But regardless, this seems to be Gable's first crack at something in the post Shorty G era. So something serious, maybe. I'm not really sure. Like I said, this is the first time that we actually got to see this version of him. So it's definitely something to monitor in the coming weeks to kind of see how it develops. But I am a big fan of Chad Gable, the wrestler. I've said it before. I was a pretty big fan of American Alpha. I wasn't a fan when they got split up. And I wasn't a fan when Heavy Machinery got split up. So maybe pairing one guy from each of those groups together might just be what you got to do. But like I said, there is still a lot of question marks here. I don't know what this Alpha Academy even is, or if you can expect Otis to even have some new characteristics or some tweaks to his character after going through this academy. So this is something that I'm going to be paying attention to for sure in the coming weeks going forward. And next we actually had the No Holds Barred match between Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins, which was set up as the final chapter in this long, drawn-out, overexposed rivalry. But I'm basically just going to kind of read off some notes here that I wrote. This was actually a long match, so it's kind of hard to like just analyze it from a whole, because there's a lot of stuff I don't really want to miss. But, I mean, it was a very physical match. I feel like both of these guys really stepped up. I mean, you can't deny that they work great together. That's one thing. You might be tired of seeing it, but you can't deny their in-ring chemistry. And that was definitely showing up tonight. I actually saw that Mysterio took a pretty... Like, you know how sometimes whenever they throw you or when they throw the wrestler through the announce table, normally they're going to move the monitors out of the way and kind of, you know, clear the table. Well, this time they Seth Rollins just basically suplexed Rey Mysterio onto the announce table, and one of the monitors was standing straight up and got him directly in his lower back. I mean, you could tell that that really hurt. I mean, there's absolutely no way you can fake that. He just slammed his whole weight on that. And I've seen it happen before, and I've always wondered if that hurts worse. And I think I got my answer today because Rey Mysterio took a brutal shot right there. But this was the best Rey Mysterio that I've seen in quite some time. And maybe I was just paying a lot more attention to this match because I thought, or because it was advertised as the last and final chapter, so I really wanted to kind of pay attention to see if there were anything that, or if there was anything that was going to lead to maybe something going forward, or this thing continuing. I don't think that is going to happen, but sticking with the match here, Seth, obviously, like I said earlier, he pays tribute to Eddie by doing the Three Amigos. And he, later in the match, exposes the steel corner of the chair, kind of one of the legs of the chair. He takes the little rubber pad at the bottom off, and he attempts to stab Ray's eye. And before he gets the chance, Dominic pulls him out of the ring, which Seth just immediately makes Dominic eat a super kick, takes him out, climbs back into the ring, but that distracts, or that, I guess, gives Rey Mysterio just enough time to get up and hit a drop kick and make the chair hit Seth Rollins right in the face, which puts him on his back. And this is where things kind of get interesting, because Buddy Murphy climbs into the ring, and you kind of knew, all right, something's going to happen here. We're going to find out what's going on. He picks Seth Rollins up, hands him the chair, and then he kind of goes over there, picks up Rey, holds him, restrains him, basically so Seth can do whatever he pleases with that chair. And this is where I really give credit to the camera people in the WWE, because they actually did a great job here. And they panned the camera angle directly behind Seth as he turned around, so you really couldn't see anything except Seth. And then you just see him just get taken out with a flying knee by Murphy. I thought that was pretty cool. And that is just basically all hell breaks loose after that as far as Seth Rollins. He's Buddy crawls out of the ring, tries to make a run for it. Seth kind of follows him on his knees, screaming at him, telling him that he trusted him. How could he do this? He's basically setting himself up in perfect position for a 619. And yikes, Rey Mysterio. If you didn't watch this match, go back and watch it. Rey Mysterio had a brutal botch. It's something you never want to see. Rey Mysterio is an all-time great. And, I mean, it happens to everybody, so I'm not just trying to bury Rey here. But it's just, I mean, he missed the 619, which you don't see him do that very often. And it was just a bad one. I even had to rewind and watch it to make sure that it wasn't done on purpose, and it definitely wasn't. But he did get all of it on his second try with the 619. And then Rey pays his own tribute to Eddie Guerrero by doing the frog splash off the top rope. And he gets a clean win. Or not, I guess not clean. Well, I mean, it's a no-hold-bars match, so everything goes. You can call it a clean win. He does get the final win over Seth Rollins, though. And this is when Buddy Murphy kind of comes into the ring, and he's embraced by the Mysterios. He's shaking Ray's hand, shaking Dominic's hand. He even gives Angie the mama hug and hugs Aaliyah. I mean, this is, you can tell that this was hopefully the end of this. I'm not really sure if Buddy Murphy's just going to be an honorary member of the Mysterios now, or if they're even going to stick around. You really don't know. But this just kind of had that end of the school year feeling. You know how basically it's the end of the school year. You're ready for summer. Everybody's ready for summer. Even all the teachers that you hated seeing all year, and you're so ready to be done with them. You're even kind of excited to see them at the end of the school year party. Whatever. This is kind of how it was. I knew that this was the end, and I was just glad to see it. I was glad to see it end. And it looks like Buddy Murphy might actually be, as everyone expected, going forward against Seth Rollins. I'm not sure if the Mysterios are going to have a part in that, because, like I said, Buddy Murphy pretty clearly got the approval from them. Rey actually said, "You want my blessing? Here you go. There you have it." Shook his hand. So, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I have no idea what they're going to do here with the Mysterios going forward, but if I were to guess, I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon. I feel like eventually, probably soon, they're not going to stick around forever, but probably at least through Survivor Series, or at least through this Buddy Murphy and Seth Rollins match, which is going to happen next week on SmackDown. If that's going to be the end, at least you could see them for one more week on SmackDown. But I'm just glad that the whole Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins thing is supposedly done for good. And after this, we get our weekly backstage promo or segment, whatever you want to call it, with Natalya pleading to Adam Pearce about being on the SmackDown women's team. And again, she doesn't want to earn it. She just wants to be given a spot on the team. This is her third qualifying match in as many weeks. So, I mean, wash, rinse, repeat. She gets out there. And this match actually starts out as a triple threat, but it immediately turns into a fatal four-way as Chelsea Green is added moments before the bell rings. and she really didn't have much of an appearance in this match at all. Neither did Tamina. A majority of this match was Natalya and Liv Morgan going one-on-one in the ring, kind of just battling it out. And Liv does have a pretty impressive win. Michael Cole said like three times during the match how impressed he was with her. So she gets the win and earns a spot on the team. And I haven't really addressed this yet, but Liv is one of my favorite wrestlers, period, on WWE, men and women. So the SmackDown review, as long as I'm going to be the host, will always be a pro Liv Morgan podcast. So I'm just going to get that out of the way. But let's see here. Seth Rollins, actually. Adam Pearce was pretty busy tonight. He had a lot of backstage segments. This was probably his least favorite, though, because Seth Rollins is beating on his door, screaming for him to come out. He finally comes out. Seth continues to scream in his face, demanding that Pearce gives him the opportunity to destroy Buddy Murphy, which, like I said, we do get that match next week on SmackDown. So we have that to look forward to. And then they stay backstage for a little bit as Kayla Braxton has an interview with Drew. Nothing really gets said there other than he basically just tells Jey Uso that it is embarrassing to get your ass kicked in your own backyard. And that's just, I mean, you know what that means. So we get another backstage segment here. Like I said, they stay backstage a lot in this episode, but this one was with Big E and the Street Profits. And the Street Profits kind of roll out like a cart with a tray on it. It has all types of different dishes of food, but they're all shaped in the letter L. So basically, just like a little shot at Big E in the New Day. And Big E fires back by saying that all the Street Profits will ever be is New Day Light, Great Value New Day, Diet New Day, whatever kind of version of that you want to say. And this encounter kind of ends in more of those awkward laughs that you hear. They did it last week where it's kind of just like they're playing it off that they're cool, but really, you know, they're not. I do want to see what they do with Big E, though. I'm kind of frustrated that this is all they can do. I mean, he's basically just a prop right now for this feud. Every week he's just going out there. He's being a messenger boy. They're just using him still in his New Day role. I'm still waiting for the singles run to get off the ground. He has a lot of potential, but until Survivor Series is over, it's hard to really know what their plans are with anybody, because they could just be putting that on hold, because obviously this Survivor Series card is going to be kind of brand versus brand specific, and you can't just fill a card with just random Raw versus SmackDown matches. They're going to probably try to keep it just championships. So I'm going to be patient here with Big E and hope that maybe after Survivor Series, during the lead up to TLC and the Royal Rumble, that he gets a little more momentum behind him and can make the most out of this singles run and his split from New Day. Moving on here, we are now to the main event, and this is that unsanctioned match that I was talking about earlier, where, I mean, seriously, if you had no idea, if you just tuned in and you didn't know that this was called an unsanctioned match, you would have never guessed that it was not a normal match. That's why I kind of started to ask myself, what the hell does unsanctioned even mean, just strictly because the ref was doing countouts. I mean, it was literally a normal match. The only thing that might have been a little bit different was, obviously, Drew gets pushed into the ring post twice. I'm not sure if even in today's WWE, if they would have even called that a DQ. The rules are so inconsistent, or at least just different than what I was used to. So I don't know if that would have been a DQ in a normal match, but that's the only, I was actually paying attention to see, and that was really the only thing I noticed that was different than just, you know, your regular vanilla one-on-one singles match. But this match itself, I mean, I was kind of looking forward to seeing how Jey stacked up against Drew. He's, you know, he's a much bigger guy. We've seen him go against Roman, Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles. So, I mean, he stepped up to the plate with every single opponent. And Drew is definitely a much different animal. And you could tell it shocks me every week. I mean, it doesn't shock me, but it baffles me just how much bigger Drew McIntyre is next to other freakishly large athletes. So he's definitely somebody that WWE is going to try to make the most out of. That's why they're probably using him here on both brands, which I was not a fan of, like I said earlier. But I tried to look past it because they did deliver on a pretty good promo. I mean, Drew McIntyre rarely ever fails when it comes to you give him a microphone. He's going to deliver. So it's hard to really be mad at what happens, but I'm just pretty set on wanting this brand split to work. So whenever they do pointless stuff like this and bring Drew McIntyre over whenever he literally has no reason to, it's hard not to get a little frustrated with them. But I love Drew, so I do try to look past it. But anyway, Roman does come out to the ring during this match. Pretty early, I'd say. Not super early, about like 10 minutes in. And he does distract Drew. I mean, he distracts him pretty good. You know how normally when somebody comes out, they'll kind of be looking towards the ramp, but still be paying a little bit of attention to their opponent because they don't want them to get the upper hand. He just straight up completely forgets about Jey Uso. I mean, I even forgot that Jey Uso was involved in the match. I was too busy focused on the possibility of Roman and Drew colliding. And Jey does make the most of that distraction by, like I said, he pushes Drew into the ring post twice and throws him back into the ring. And Roman tells Jey that he doesn't care if he wins. He just wants Jey to make Drew understand. And that ultimately meant nothing, because if you fast forward 30 seconds, Drew's hitting Jey with the Claymore and pinning him 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. But after the match, Roman and Drew have a little bit of a face-to-face. And Drew asks Roman if he understands now. And Roman kind of looks down at his Universal Championship that's on his shoulder and tells Drew, get yourself one of these and then we'll talk. And Raw goes off the air. So, I mean, like I said, I've already talked about it enough as far as Drew being on SmackDown. Made no sense. You could probably expect somebody from SmackDown to be on Raw on Monday. But like I said, hopefully after Survivor Series, this all goes out the window and they focus on more of the brand-specific rivalries, but you really can't get your hopes up too much on that because you might be disappointed if you do. But overall, this was, you know, a pretty plain episode of SmackDown. I mean, it wasn't great. There really wasn't a whole lot that I took from it. I mean, you got the Chad Gable. I'm going to try to make sure I only call him Chad Gable. But you got that new stuff. Obviously, you had Drew coming over to SmackDown. You had Liv Morgan make her way to the SmackDown team, which I really loved. You got a Sami Zayn appearance, a whole lot of Adam Pearce backstage. Maybe you might get something new with Otis going forward, and obviously the end of the Seth and Rey stuff. So there were some good things to take out of this SmackDown. It was a good show, but hopefully, like I have alluded to several times, hopefully next week on SmackDown there are only SmackDown superstars. But I'm not going to be any more annoying with that more than I already have. So that was the SmackDown review, guys, like I promised. And now I am going to get to my top 5 finishing moves of all time. All right, and for my top 5 finishing moves, I actually want to list a few honorable mentions before I get started on the top 5. And like I said, I mean, this is going to be a lot quicker than normal. I'm not going to go really into detail. I'm just going to kind of say what moves I like and why I like them. But with these moves, I kind of tried to stay away from the moves that like give the ones that aren't necessarily realistic. And I know you have to suspend your reality and your belief when it comes to watching wrestling. But for instance, let me just think. For example, Drew McIntyre doing the 3-2-1 countdown. I mean, it's letting your opponent know. The spear, whenever you're just waiting in the corner, kind of bouncing. I mean, your opponent knows. I've heard people allude to Randy Orton's little pound. Although, I will just go ahead and spoil alert right now. The RKO is on my top 5 because that move can be done without the whole pound on the mat thing. And I honestly, like I've said in previous episodes, I really didn't watch during the PG era, and I feel like that's whenever Randy Orton really started to do that. So whenever I came back during around, you know, 2014 and started watching again, I saw that Randy Orton was doing that. I was kind of like, what the hell is this? Like, I mean, he wasn't doing this when I stopped watching, but I've kind of gotten used to it now, and I know that it is something that he does, but I am not really taking that into consideration whenever I'm doing this. But my honorable mentions here. I want to start with the Undertaker's moveset as a whole. Just, and I'm not talking about, you know, I'm just talking about his main three moves, which are the Tombstone Piledriver, the Chokeslam, and the Last Ride. Now, if you played SmackDown Here Comes the Pain, like I did way back in God knows how long, but anytime you were Undertaker, you knew you had a very good chance of winning just because of those three moves. It's pretty much three finishing moves and one character, and just the moves themselves. I mean, he does them perfect. Obviously, he's probably modified some. I feel like the Tombstone might have been a little more your head getting contacted with the mat back in the day. Obviously, people being injured and neck injuries and stuff like that, they probably had to switch it a little bit. But I was always a big fan of those moves, and whenever the Undertaker is the one that's doing them, it's hard not to like him even more. Next, I have the Walls of Jericho, and this is a move that literally, I mean, if you have a little brother or if you wrestle with your friends, you 100% did this move at some point in time. I mean, I can, just being honest, I literally did this move like weeks ago to somebody, just wrestling all around. But that is a move that I really like. Chris Jericho, obviously, he's not a WWE star anymore, but he's a WWE legend. I was always a big Chris Jericho fan. I love that Walls of Jericho, so I had to give that at least an honorable mention. Another honorable mention is the Batista Bomb. He was just so perfect with it. He did it smooth. You've seen power bombs from so many different wrestlers, and for some reason, I feel like he was the first one that actually kind of went down with them and just maybe made it seem like it was just a little more, he put a little more force into it. And obviously, in the Ruthless Aggression era, Batista was one of the stars that was made there. So everybody that was around my age group during that time was probably a pretty big Batista fan. So that might be a little bit of bias playing into there. And my last move that's an honorable mention is the spear. And I wasn't going to put the spear on here just because so many people do it. It's pretty simple, but if it's done right, like, I love whenever Roman Reigns doesn't go to the corner and does it, whenever he runs off the ropes and kind of just confuses them on where he is, and then he just hits it out of nowhere. That's the spear that I like. I will say I'm not a fan at all of Charlotte's spear. I feel like she has the worst spear of all time. I've even seen some people say that she has the best, like, on Twitter polls or stuff like that, and I mean, you need to go get your glasses cleaned if you think she has a good spear. Sorry, just gonna say that. But moving on to my actual top five, and I'm going to start it with the one move that I feel like probably isn't a finishing move, but it's so damn impressive, and not everybody can do it, and that is the Shooting Star Press. It's a top turnbuckle move. It's basically like a backflip, but I mean, if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. You basically flip forward and you jump forward. Brock Lesnar famously has a botched one of these at WrestleMania 19 against Kurt Angle that was actually pretty scary. If you haven't seen that one, you should probably go check it out. But Billy Kidman, he's an old WCW wrestler. He was in the WWE on SmackDown for a little bit in the Ruthless Aggression era. He's pretty good at this move, as well as I've seen Buddy Murphy do it before too. It's not something that you see really all the time, especially on actual WWE TV. Probably because it is so dangerous, but I had to put this one on there because, like I said, this is just one of the moves that is, like, just one of the more beautiful ones to see actually in a match. Especially, like, whenever Brock Lesnar did it, the announcers even saying whenever he's climbing to the rope, they're like, Brock Lesnar never goes to the top rope. And I'm pretty sure that might actually be the first one I ever saw, was the one at WrestleMania 19. And seeing it actually done successfully since then just makes me like it even more. So I had to put that one here on my top five. And at number four here, this is kind of one of those moves I was referring to earlier that really gives your opponent a warning whenever it's coming. But with this move, I kind of look past that altogether here because of who did it. And because it's not only done in that way, and that is the sweet chin music, not the super kick. The sweet chin music, and I feel like there is a difference. Obviously, Shawn Michaels probably absolutely hates that his move has turned into a transition move today. I know I do. There was probably about seven of them on SmackDown today, and that's without even counting. I'm sure there might have been more, but that just shows you this move is just, I mean, that's why everybody wants to do it, is because it's such a kick-ass move. And Shawn Michaels did it better than anybody, especially the ones where that. you knew it wasn't coming, or you didn't know it was coming, sorry, when like he was wearing his jeans and cowboy boots and he hit you with it. Those were just the most brutal ones. You saw a lot of those back in the day. But even in the match, I mean, whenever he just cut you out of nowhere with it, I mean, this is the move that literally retired Ric Flair. So that alone should get it on the top five, and it definitely makes its way to mine. And at number three, I might actually get a little bit of heat for this one, but I'm not sure why. I mean, this is the RKO coming in at number three here by Randy Orton. And, I mean, like I said, I try to keep this list on moves that are more realistic, just as far as, like, they can be hit at any moment. Like, I've heard people complain about the Superman punch, how you could see it coming, along with many, many other moves. The RKO is truly a move that can be hit out of nowhere, completely unexpected. You've seen a lot of, you know, pretty cool spots with the RKO, such as, like, Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 31 when he was trying to do the stomp, and he reversed that. And also the one, which I'm not sure how many of you have seen, the Untold that just came out on the WWE Network about Randy Orton and The Undertaker and their, well, I don't know how long, about 9-month feud they had. They actually said that at WrestleMania 21, during their match, The Undertaker actually went out of his way to make sure that Randy Orton got his RKO in the match. And some people say that it was that RKO that he did at WrestleMania 21 is what really put the move over for all the fans. And it's still one of the moves today that no matter when you see it, no matter who he does it to, the crowd, if there is a crowd, will always go crazy. And at number two here is a move who could very easily be at number one, and it's the Pedigree. Triple H is one of the best heels of all time. Arguably one of the best wrestlers of all time. And his move was just perfect. One thing I like about it is you rarely ever see it, other than Seth Rollins going on his little phase there where he used it as his finishing move whenever he couldn't use the stomp until he brought that back. The Pedigree was a move that was kind of put on the shelf and not really used by anybody. And it's a great move. There's nothing like kicking somebody in the midsection. We'll just call it midsection. And having them bend over and you grab them and you put their hands behind their back. I mean, they literally can't do anything. That's one of the realistic moves that I was talking about here where, I mean, you could literally go out and pedigree somebody right now if you wanted to. I mean, I wouldn't recommend doing that, but you can definitely do that. And just with how he positions them, I mean, there's nothing that he can do. They were more and more brutal back in the day. You kind of see him let up a little bit now. But man, I saw him hit some brutal pedigrees back in the Ruthless Aggression era. Whether it was to Goldberg, I mean, I'm pretty sure Stephanie McMahon got one here or there. There's just a lot of people that suffered from the pedigree, and I was a big fan of it, and it's just one of the coolest moves even to this day. And at number one here, it should be at no surprise to anybody considering that I haven't mentioned it yet, and it would certainly be in at least the honorable mentions or somewhere in the top five if it's not the number one spot, and that's exactly what it is. And I'm going with the Stone Cold Stunner. And this is probably the most famous, most popular move. It's realistic. I've seen him do it so many times with so many people. And it just brings me so much joy every single time he does. Probably no moment was better as far as him stunnering people or more memorable than whenever he got all the McMahons. And or this is just my opinion, of course. When he stunnered all four McMahons and just drenched the whole ring in beer. I'm not sure when this was. That memory for some reason pops in my mind every time I think about the stunner. There's also the, of course, WrestleMania 20 match with Goldberg and Brock Lesnar when he was the special guest referee and ended up stunnering both of them during that match. And those are probably honestly some of the most least memorable to the, you know, Universal crowd. They probably remember a lot more like from WrestleManias or, you know, Monday Night Raw main events from the Attitude Era. I mean, this move is just one that you see Kevin Owens do it today. There's nothing like getting the, you know, flipping the bird to somebody, again, kicking him in the midsection, which is always the best setup for a finishing move. If you're kicking him in the midsection, there's a good chance I'm going to like your finishing move. But that's always what Stone Cold does. He does it, flips them off, gets in their face. I mean, there's nobody better than Stone Cold Steve Austin in almost every single aspect of a professional wrestling character. So there's just no surprise that his move comes in at number one, and it probably won't be the last time that Stone Cold comes in at number one on these top fives here. But I hope that you guys liked it today, the top five finishing moves. I know it was a little bit quicker than last couple weeks, but the next one, hopefully, I'll be able to provide you guys some audio and maybe even some article quotes. But that was the SmackDown review, guys. It was a pretty jam-packed show, of course, talking about the Zelina Vega news, the SmackDown itself, and the top five. Once again, shout out Eddie Guerrero 15 years ago. Still hard to believe, but I really hope you guys enjoyed this show. I really enjoyed doing it. I appreciate you guys listening and tuning in. I know that there's a lot of options that you guys can listen to. So anytime you guys choose to listen to me, just know that I greatly appreciate it. It's actually 1:09 Central Time AM, so I usually stay up pretty late doing these every Friday night. Not a complaint at all. I love doing this. I look forward to doing it every week, like I said. So just bear with me here, guys, and we are going to keep this train rolling. But for now, that is all I got for you. So I will talk to you next week.